Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is Side 1 of For the Record Program Number 611, titled Update on 9/11 and Related Matters, subtitled Caution, Networks at Work. This program is being recorded on September 23rd of the year 2007. And before I get to the main body of the broadcast, let me, as always, encourage you most emphatically to take advantage of the tremendous amount of online information available at www.spitfirelist.com and related websites. www.spitfirelist.com is a website maintained by the CD duplication service that is the home base for the dissemination of the material I produce here. And that website and related websites, including those maintained by WFMU, contain a wealth of both audio and printed information. Among the sources of information available on those websites, an entire mini library of old anti-fascist books a half a century or more in age, available for download for free. So, those of you who only listen to the audio portion of the broadcast, the For the Record programs per se, are missing the larger part of the For the Record experience. So www.spitfirelist.com and linked websites, a wealth of information to help you through the troubling times that are coming. We're going to begin by taking a look at some interesting connections and activities of the Hunt family and how they relate not only to the debacle unfolding now in Iraq, but also some of the activities relating to the bank Al-Taqwa and activities connected with September 11th. From a TPM website or blog, and the full URL will be available in the description for this broadcast in the For the Record section of the www.spitfirelist.com website, we have dated September 13th of 2007, Oil Buddies by Josh Marshall. It reads as follows. An article in tomorrow's New York Times reports that the long-negotiated compromise, which seemed to be leading towards an Iraqi oil law, a key progress, unquote, benchmark, has apparently collapsed. All gone, down the drain. The story, though, connects up with another one we told you about just a couple of days ago, the decision of the Kurdistan Regional Government in Iraq to sign an oil exploration deal with Dallas-based Hunt Oil, run by Mr. Ray L. Hunt. The Shia and Sunni leaders believe the Kurds are opting for a sort of oil secession that puts them outside the whole concept of a law to share the country's oil resources. And the Hunt deal is apparently the straw that broke the camel's back, shall we say. But remember, Hunt, in addition to being the son of legendary Texas John Birch Society extremist H.L. Hunt, is also a pal of the president's. Indeed, President Bush has twice appointed Hunt to his Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board. So while the president is striving to get the Iraqis to meet these benchmarks, one of his own pals, and more importantly, political appointees, is helping to tear the whole thing apart. So recapping here, Hunt Oil, led by Ray Hunt, twice a member of President Bush's Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board, is now working out a separate oil deal with the Kurds, something that is raising the hackles of Shia and Sunni alike. We'll see what the ultimate outcome of that is. What is interesting here, and that is yet another indication of what I talk about when I refer to networking. Often, this field of inquiry is demeaned as conspiracy theory. It's understandable, but what we're really looking at here is networking. We're looking at powerful interests working together for common or at least perceived common goals, and often that not only creates strange bedfellows, but it creates catastrophes of one sort or another. Now, the Hunts are major players on the American political, economic, and parapolitical scene. Their associations run from the John Birch Society, the MacArthur Group within the military, the assassination of President Kennedy, domestic fascist groups right on overseas and around the world to fascist groups dating to World War II in both Asia and Europe. One of the interesting things about Ray Hunt being on the president's Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board is that in our examinations of the bank Al-Taqwa, the financial institution of the Muslim Brotherhood, headed up by former Nazi spy Youssef Nada, a man whose networks run deeply through the Islamic Institute, the Republican Islamic Ethnic Outreach Organization aimed at recruiting Muslims to the Republican Party. Youssef Nada's bank Al-Taqwa had a special account run for Al-Qaeda, and that was run by a fellow named Ali bin Musalim. This information came to light in a letter from a Mr. Wolf of the Treasury Department to the Swiss authorities. A month after that letter became public, Ali bin Musalim was found dead in his Lausanne, Switzerland apartment. It eventually came out that Mr. bin Musalim, who had run this account with an unlimited line of credit for Al-Qaeda in Bank Al-Taqwa of Youssef Nada, Ali bin Musalim had previously been under indictment in the United States for having conspired to corner the silver market. That was done in conjunction with the Hunt family, including Nelson Bunker Hunt. Nelson Bunker Hunt, one of the most venal members of that clan, an individual whose associations, again, run from the milieu of the John Birch Society, the assassination of President Kennedy, Asian and European fascists, the Iran-Contra support effort, and H.L. Hunt was deeply involved with the attempts at cornering the silver market, acting in conjunction with Saudis and apparently also Ali bin Musalim of Bank Al-Taqwa. That's the late Ali bin Musalim. So imagine, first of all, and consider the fact that a full examination of the Bank Al-Taqwa would have led in many directions, including in the direction of people like Grover Norquist, Talat Altman, Karl Rove, and other intimates of George Bush and the Republican Party itself, linking them basically to the milieu of the financing of Al-Qaeda, Hamas, and Palestinian Islamic Jihad. A full investigation of Bank Al-Taqwa would have revealed, again, the curious situation of Ali bin Musalim, the fellow who ran the Al-Taqwa account for Al-Qaeda, and an individual who previously had been a collaborator of the Hunts. At the same time as this information is being considered by the various federal intelligence and investigative bodies that are considering, bear in mind that Ray Hunt, son of H.L. Hunt and brother of Nelson Bunker Hunt, intimate of Ali bin Musalim, is sitting back and, to a certain extent, I guess, advising foreign intelligence or advising on matters of foreign intelligence for the Bush administration. So perhaps we shouldn't be all that surprised when not only did the Bush administration withhold documents that were requested by the Swiss authorities for the investigation of Bank Al-Taqwa, but a month after the information about Ali bin Musalim running an account for Al-Taqwa or in Al-Taqwa for Al-Qaeda, a month after that became public, Mr. bin Musalim was found dead in his Lausanne, Switzerland apartment. Another interesting tributary in the networking that surrounds the events in and around September 11th, and sadly, again, a connection that has largely gone uninvestigated, and that concerns the Saudi bin Laden group itself, and even more importantly, in my opinion, the SECO, the Swiss-based holding company for the various profound and wealthy business enterprises of the bin Laden family. The San Francisco Chronicle of Tuesday, September 24th of 2007, carried the following story by Larry Neumeister of the Associated Press. It's Dateline New York. It's headlined, Bin Laden Group, Not Liable for 9/11. Subtitled, Family Firm Says It Pushed Al-Qaeda Leader Out Years Ago. It reads in part, the Saudi bin Laden group is not yet liable for the September 11th attacks, attorneys for the multinational engineering firm claim, because it made Osama bin Laden surrender his stake in the company 14 years ago. Responding in federal court to lawsuits over the attacks, the lawyers wrote that in 1993, the terrorist mastermind was forced out as a shareholder in two companies his family owns. The company filed the defense papers late Friday in U.S. District Court in answer to claims brought by representatives, survivors, and insurance carriers of the victims. The plaintiffs, who seek billions of dollars in damages, allege the Saudi bin Laden Group, along with numerous banks, charities, and individuals worldwide, provide material support and assistance to Al-Qaeda prior to the attacks. Well, it is more than a little interesting, again, to see very slowly the wheels of justice grinding here, or perhaps the wheels of injustice being greased under the circumstances. The networking involved here is profound, and bear in mind that for many years, as we've discussed in past broadcasts, the main legal counsel for the Saudi bin Laden group is none other than the white shoe elite law firm of Sullivan and Cromwell, the same white shoe Wall Street law firm whose key operatives, Allen and John Foster Dulles, among other things, helped to invest Bush family money on behalf of the Nazis in World War II. The Dulleses and Sullivan and Cromwell, very, very important players in the fields of American law, politics, and national security affairs for much of the 19th and 20th centuries, and still doing so today. Also note that, as we've looked at in among other programs, for the record, 498 and 499, SECO, whose aviation subsidiary trained pilots down at little old Huffman Aviation in Venice, Florida, SECO, the Swiss-based holding company for the bin Laden business enterprises, has some very, very interesting investigative tributaries to be pursued. What is very interesting is that a key director of SECO and a former co-chairman of the board of directors of SECO is a fellow named Baudin Dunant. Baudin Dunant was a lawyer for, attorney for, protege of, and close friend of the late François Genoux, a key Nazi spy before, during, and after World War II, and a man, Genoux that is, who was the heir to the political last will and testament and collected literary works of, get this, Adolf Hitler, Martin Bormann, and Joseph Goebbels. And Baudin Dunant was his attorney, protege, and friend. And Baudin Dunant was the co-chairman of the board of directors of SECO and remains a key director to this day. In late 1999 and or late 2000 and early 2001, I should say, Baudin Dunant was liquidating financial entities linked to the Iran-Contra affair in Europe. Then in the spring of 2001, SECO opened 16 unpublished accounts with the Clearstream Financial Network. That is completely illegal. And note that it was in the same time period that Mohammed Atta and other of the hijackers were enrolling at and training at and basically operating through the front of Huffman Aviation and some of the related aviation entities in that part of Florida. And we've noted, too, in For the Record 498 and 499, that it was Baudin Dunant, the aforementioned Baudin Dunant, who also opened up a number of offshore entities in the early 1980s that were to be used and were used to help arm the Afghan Mujahideen. Many of those same entities were then used to assist al-Qaeda and may have very well been used for September 11th. Now, one of the things that we have taken a look at, too, as we've examined many of the evidentiary tributaries that have coursed through the milieu being investigated for many years by Daniel Hopsicker down in Florida, as we've looked at some of the entities that have tracked through the milieu of Huffman Aviation in Venice, Florida, again, at which the SECO Aviation subsidiary trained its pilots, and again, SECO, the European-based holding company for the bin Laden business interests. The aviation subsidiary of SECO sends its pilots down to Huffman Aviation to be trained. In late 2000-2001, the co-chairman of the board of directors of SECO, the Nazi-linked Baudin Dunant, is liquidating financial entities linked to the Iran-Contra affair. And then in the spring of 2001, SECO opened 16 unpublished accounts with Clearstream to move money. And then down at Huffman Aviation, SECO's pilots are being trained. There's all sorts of strange money moving in and out of Huffman Aviation, drugs being trafficked there, evidentiary tributaries running from Huffman Aviation to the old Iran-Contra networks. So one of the questions I've asked in 498 and 499 is what relationship exists with these networks, because you want to be very careful if you're dealing with any of these entities. You're going to want to be careful if you're around them because they're dangerous. So caution, networks at work. Some of the networks at work down through Huffman Aviation involve some very mysterious, very powerful, very dangerous Eastern European crime syndicates. We've taken a look at the fact that Wolfgang Barringer, one of the many German pilots who was an associate of Muhammad Atta's in the dealings that Atta had in Florida, one of the many German, Swiss, and Austrians that Muhammad Atta was associated with in that area. Wolfgang Boringer was a pilot for, among others, Viktor Kozeny, the Czech-based international criminal known as the Pirate of Prague. Viktor Kozeny, in turn, intersects with, among others, a fellow named Semyon Mogilevich, one of the most dangerous and also one of the most enterprising of the Eastern European crime figures. And in fact, the milieu of Viktor Kozeny, which intersects the milieu of Wolfgang Boringer and Muhammad Atta, overlaps that of Semyon Mogilevich. And indeed, Semyon Mogilevich's world has many tributaries running in the direction of international terrorism, al-Qaeda, and related elements. By way of underscoring again the fact that caution, networks at work, is really what we're looking at here, we're looking at dangerous networks, one of the outgrowths of which was September 11th. And we're looking at powerful networks, some of the outgrowths of which were September 11th, and none of these networks are being touched. These are overworld networks and underworld networks, both powerful, both criminal, both untouched to date. And in the two-part series, 3 Days of the Falcon, Part 1 and 2, I took a look at some of the overlaps, areas of overlap between Eastern European organized crime and the SECO milieu that I just alluded to and talked about in For the Record 498 and 499. Now, of the life and times of Semyon Mogilevich, we read the following, this coming from the Village Voice of May 20th through May 26th of 1998, an article by Robert I. Friedman headlined, "The Most Dangerous Mobster in the World." According to the FBI and Israeli intelligence, Semyon Mogilevich rules over an arms trafficking, money laundering, drug running, and art smuggling red mafia. Again, from the Village Voice issue of May 20th through 26th of 1998, bear in mind that the milieu of Semyon Mogilevich overlaps the milieu of Huffman Aviation, Wolfgang Boringer, Muhammad Atta, and the networks that were at work in September 11th, or in the events around September 11th. This article about Semyon Mogilevich reads, "In two posh villas outside the small town of Rakhani, near Prague, one of the most dreaded mob families in the world savagely murders its terrified victims. The mob's young enforcers, trained by veterans of the Afghanistan War, are infamous for their extreme brutality. Their quarry, usually businessmen who have balked at extortion demands, are repeatedly stabbed and tortured and then mutilated before they are butchered. The carnage is so hideous that it has scared the daylights out of competing crime groups in the area. The torture chambers are run by what international police officials call the Red Mafia, a notorious Russian mob family that in only 6 years has become a nefarious global crime cartel. Based in Budapest, it has key centers in New York, Pennsylvania, Southern California, and as far away as New Zealand. The enigmatic leader of the Red Mafia is a 52-year-old Ukrainian-born Jew named Semyon Mogilevich. He is a shadowy figure known as the Brainy Don. He holds an economics degree from the University of Lvov, and until now, he has never been exposed by the media. But the Voice has obtained hundreds of pages of classified FBI and Israeli intelligence documents from August of 1996, and these documents, as well as recent interviews with a key criminal associate and with dozens of law enforcement sources here and abroad, describe Mogilevich as someone who has become a grave threat to the stability of Israel and Eastern Europe, and I would say a great many other places, including the United States, because the networks, the tremendous, powerful, underground and overground networks that this man commands and of which he is a part, are networks that overlap the milieu of September 11th. And basically, with these networks, anything goes. And a lot of things went with September 11th, and a whole lot more things may go with whatever follows September 11th, because the power at work here simply has not been touched. Skipping down. Allegations of Mogilevich's devilish array of criminal activities are extensively detailed in the reports. The FBI and Israeli intelligence assert that Mogilevich traffics in nuclear materials, drugs, prostitutes, precious gems, and stolen art. His contract hit squads operated in the U.S. and Europe. Parenthetically, his personal enforcers are veterans, are trained by veterans of the Afghanistan war, translation, Islamists, basically jihadis. Continuing, his contract hit squads operate in the U.S. and Europe. He controls everything that goes in and out of Moscow's Sheremetyevo International Airport, a smuggler's paradise, unquote, says Elson. Mogilevich bought a bankrupt airline in a former Central Asian Soviet republic for millions of dollars in cash so that he could haul heroin out of the Golden Triangle. Most worrisome to U.S. authorities is Mogilevich's apparently legal purchase of virtually the entire Hungarian armaments industry, jeopardizing regional security, NATO, and the war against terrorism. Skipping down. On April 28th, the German national television network ZDF reported that the BND, parenthetically the successor organization to the Gehlen Org, the Nazi Eastern Front intelligence group that jumped to the CIA after World War II, the BND, beginning again, on April 28th, the German national television network ZDF reported that the BND, the German intelligence agency, had entered into a secret contract with Mogilevich to provide information about the Russian mob. The charges were made by several sources, including Pierre Delillet, a highly regarded Belgian police investigator who specializes in Russian organized crime. Because of Mogilevich's deal with the BND, police in Belgium, Germany, and Austria have complained that it is now impossible to investigate the brainy Don. So allegedly here, Mogilevich is now working as a BND asset. That isn't the only element, or the BND aren't the only powerful element in joining the cooperation of Mr. Mogilevich. We're going to take a look at an article talking about some of the interesting lobbyists in Washington, D.C., or some of the interesting people who are functioning as lobbyists in Washington, D.C. for various elements. Turning now to the Wall Street Journal of Tuesday, April 17th of 2007, there's an article by Glenn Simpson and Mary Jacoby. Glenn Simpson, by the way, has been doing some great work about the terror financing networks. This article is called How Lobbyists Help Ex-Soviets Woo Washington. It's subheaded, Scrubbed Images Open Doors, Assure Investors a Most Wanted, unquote, Client. Now, see if you can guess who that most wanted client might be. If you guess Semyon Mogilevich, that wouldn't be a bad guess, but I'll bet you can't figure out who his lobbyist is, huh? His lobbyist is Mr. Sessions. That's William Sessions, and that basically is the former director of the FBI, Judge Sessions. Skipping down in this particular article, Mr. Sessions' client, Mr. Mogilevich, is accused in a 45-count racketeering and money laundering indictment in Philadelphia of masterminding an elaborate stock fraud using a web of shell companies in Europe. The Justice Department also was investigating whether there are any ties between Mr. Mogilevich and a recent series of billion-dollar natural gas deals between Russian gas giant OAO Gazprom and Ukraine, people familiar with the matter said. The probe is being led by the Justice Department's Organized Crime and Racketeering Section. According to people familiar with the matter, Mr. Sessions recently approached many former colleagues at Justice with an unusual offer. Mr. Mogilevich would provide the U.S. with intelligence on Islamist terrorism if prosecutors opened negotiations to resolve his legal problems in the U.S. Federal prosecutors rejected that offer, lawyers and others familiar with the matters said. So again, note that the former director of the FBI and a federal judge are working basically, or he, that is Mr. Sessions, working as the lobbyist for Mr. Mogilevich, and Mr. Mogilevich's activities directly overlap the activities of Wolfgang Berger and company, including Victor Kozeny, and the other activities of the Pirate of Prague. And the Pirate of Prague and the Wolfgang Berger milieu, part of the milieu of Mohammed Atta, and part of the networks that were at work vis-a-vis September 11th. And so you want to be very careful when you've got those networks at work. Speaking of networking, when we're going to begin on side two, with discussion of Yassin Al-Qadi and some of the many networks of which he is a part, including PTEC, the Muslim Brotherhood-financed, terrorist-financed company that developed the threat assessment software architecture for, among other interests, the FAA, NORAD, and the United States Air Force, as well as for the Department of Energy. We're going to talk about Yassin Qadi on side, too, but if one wanted to pick a particular epicenter, a particular focal point for investigating September 11th, the center of the spider's web, so to speak, would be the Bank Altaqua. Now, we took a look at one tributary of the Bank Altaqua, which runs in the direction of the Islamic Institute and the GOP, Grover Norquist, Karl Rove, Talat Atman, and powerful interests of that ilk. Another tributary runs in the direction of the Muslim Brotherhood and Al-Qaeda and Islamist terrorism. Another branch runs in the direction of Third Reich veterans like François Genoux and Youssef Nada. Another branch runs in the direction of European neo-fascism and veteran European fascism as well. People involved with the Bank Altaqua, people that were focal points of the Operation Green Quest raids of March 20th of 2002, figure prominently in the aforementioned PTEC company. And the PTEC company may very well have been the fact that that company was developing the threat assessment software architecture for the Air Force, for the Federal Aviation Administration, and for NORAD on September 11th may very well have had something to do with the anomalous performance of air defense units on that particular date. PTEC, in turn, has a very strong degree of overlap with Operation Green Quest, with the milieu of the Bank Altaqua. And, two, one of the interesting things about the Bank Altaqua milieu is that it does, as I say, have a phase two, or a parapet that opens up on the vistas of European fascism, including Italian fascism, grouped around the old P2 Lodge milieu, and the Alleanza Nazionale, the Italian Fascist Party, because it was the P2 Alleanza Nazionale milieu that helped to float, or would play a key role, I should say, in the floating of the Niger yellowcake uranium canard that was used by the Bush administration as a centerpiece for some of the disinformation, the bad intelligence that was used to justify the Iraq invasion, and which, in my opinion, was used to gull the Bush administration and related interests into a trap, basically, in which the United States is now going to be locked into a war with much of the Muslim population of the old Earth Island, something that ultimately certainly is draining the United States at this point, and that may ultimately come to destroy it. So many, many, many tributaries run out from the center of the Altaqua web. The old P2 Italian fascist milieu that is involved with the Niger yellowcake uranium disinformation. You've got the PTEC anomalous performance of air defense units investigation vis-a-vis September 11th. You've got a concrete investigative link between elements of the Bush administration and the milieu that was financing Al-Qaeda. You've got direct links between the old Islamo-fascist networks that worked with the Third Reich and the Bush administration and the milieu of September 11th, and links running to both European and both German and Italian neo-fascism, also links running in the direction of Latin American and North American neo-fascism as well. So for one particular focal point, the center of the web would be Bank Altaqua, with all of those many links that I've touched and which I could develop and have developed in the past at much, much greater length. So to examine that past, www.spitfirelist.com and related websites, please do take advantage of that material. This concludes Side 1 of For the Record Program number 611, update on September 11th, titled Caution, Networks at Work. This has been recorded on September 23rd of the year 2007. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.